Have you ever wondered what was going on between the ears of your crush? Ever wondered where things are going with the guy you're dating? Are you dissatisfied with your love life? Are you happily attached but still want to improve things? If so, you have come to the right place. I am proud to share with you that your search is over. You are now listening to
What Is He Thinking?
What is he thinking?
What is he thinking?
The Dating and Relationship Podcast for the benefit of women from the perspective of men. And now, without further ado, your host, Alexander B. Stevens.
You are now listening to The Authentic Male Perspective on Dating and Relationships.
Season 2, Episode 15, Episode 37 overall. Let's crank this thing up. What's going on? This is Alexander B. Stevens, the host of your favorite podcast, the What Is He Thinking podcast. Don't forget, this is the podcast where we do something that most people in your life don't do, and that's tell you the 100% truth. Welcome to the podcast where we want your tomorrow to be better than your yesterday. Today, we are concluding our series on Kevin Samuels. Kevin Samuels Examined Part 3, Controversial. Today, we're going to finish up with the Kevin Samuels talking points that we agree with, move on to some talking points that we disagree with, address some talking points that are controversial, why Kevin himself in general is controversial, and we conclude with our overall final thoughts on Kevin Samuels in his totality. Before we continue into the episode, I need everybody on YouTube to like, share, comment on the video, and subscribe. I respond to all comments. If you're not listening to us on YouTube, why aren't you? Check us out on YouTube, search What Is He Thinking Podcast, click on the red and black logo, and you will find us and additional content that you will not find on the podcast site that you're listening to us on. Last thing before we get into it, if you feel like you received value from this episode or any one of the 36 episodes before it, I would greatly appreciate it if you could show me a little gratitude in my Cash App. That's $ What Is He Thinking. Hundreds of hours and thousands of dollars have been poured into this podcast. So if you could let me know that you appreciate it with a small donation to $ What Is He Thinking, I will definitely reinvest it into the show and make sure this podcast train stays on the tracks. All right, enough housekeeping. Let's move forward. Disclaimer, the episode you are listening to now and all episodes in this current series were conceived in January of 2021. Most of the recordings of this episode and all the episodes of this series were recorded the first and second week of March in 2022. All this being said, please keep in mind when listening to this episode that we will be speaking about the subject matter in present tense, not knowing that the subject matter of the episode would have passed away tragically and unexpectedly by the time the episode was actually released to the public. After this episode's recording in the month of March, the plan always was for it to be released in May and early June. So the fact that this episode is being released and the time period that it's being released has nothing to do with trying to capitalize on the unfortunate, untimely, unexpected death of Mr. Kevin R. Samuels. Myself, Alexander B. Stevens, and all of the co-hosts and guests that I've had on the show this season would like to give our condolences to the surviving family of Mr. Kevin R. Samuels, his loved ones, and his close friends. Please bow with me for a moment of silence. Thank you. Disclaimer concluded. Once again, I brought in my main man, SW, to give me a little bit of assistance and to give the audience another perspective. How you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm all right, Alexander. Thank you for having me on. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right. You know how it is. Another day, another dollar.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's hop back into it. In the previous episode, in our earlier conversation, we talked about some of the advice that Kevin Samuels gives men in their 20s and early 30s. such as men in their 20s need to be working at least 60 hours a week, and men shouldn't think about getting married before the age of 35. But in addition to those 2 points, Kevin has more advice for young men. On top of not thinking about getting married until you're 35, he feels like you should not get married at all unless you are a high-earning man. Because being high-earning increases your chances of being respected by a woman and also increases your leverage in the relationship. How do you feel about if you're not a high-value man or a Henry, you shouldn't even get married in today's culture? How do you feel about that talking point?
That's controversial to me because I think he often spews a lot about reforming the family. And I think that since the culture is one about money, 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 but as a community, we really need the community aspect of it. And community is created through families. I'm actually one that is a proponent of marriage. Regardless of your means, you just have to be more selective. I think you need to use more of the friends you've had from college, that friend circle, maybe family members, folks who know people that can maybe perhaps introduce guys to the young ladies or ladies introduce you to young guys with maybe the like mindset, like values. I don't think we should be pulling away from it, irregardless of your financial situation. If we're going to really focusing to try and reform our families and our community, we're going to have to be together. And the only way you can really truly solidify that is through marriage, because that's going to try and bring you together in forming that relationship and forming a, I maybe call me old school, a covenant that you two really try hard not to break.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And I guess when you look at it that way, you make a pretty good point there. Because if only high earning top 20% earners should get married, people are going to be having intercourse regardless. You know what I mean? Like, that's not going to stop. So if only 20% of the men are getting married, then that means there's going to be even more out of wedlock kids than we already have. And that, whether people want to admit it or not, is the root cause of pretty much every social problem in the culture.
Right.
Is the broken family and not having both masculine and feminine to raise the kids, or not having that stability. So I hear you on that for sure. I feel like that talking point is kind of given out of fear, fear of divorce, fear of not being able to find a woman that will allow you to be the leader if you're not a six-figure guy. If you make a lot of money and you have to give a big settlement, Dr. Dre, Bill Gates, they're still okay. You know what I mean? Like, their woman left them, they gave them a bunch of money and they still have a bunch more. But if you only got $40,000 and she takes half of it, now you're eating dog food. So yeah. I feel like it's a statement kind of made out of fear. And something Kevin also says when he's talking to women is basically you shouldn't make decisions out of scarcity, lacking, or fear. So it's a little bit of a contradiction there,
because scarcity, lack.
Because that's an ideal that's built out of fear. But let's move on to another KS talking point.
Okay.
Men should pay for everything. So I guess this is why he wants married men to be high earners or whatnot, because he feels like a woman should never have to crack her wallet open for anything, and especially for a man to maintain leverage and to maintain respect and leadership in a relationship. He has to be paying for everything that's all needs and wants. I feel like this is maybe kind of idealistic and unrealistic. Less than 5 to 10% of men, especially in today's society, could really actually do that.
Yeah.
Both of us are traditional leaning, but the way money's set up and jobs are set up and the gas prices and everything else, a man paying for everything, especially in a world where women are working and want to work, I don't know how practical it really is. So
I think that can work if the man is paying for the big things and the woman has to, she has to pay for something. So like, for example, in a household, the man pays a mortgage and car notes and she pays utilities and food.
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you on that. And that's kind of my mentality or whatnot, or what I would tell my kids or my younger siblings or whatnot as to how things should go. But that's not everything. You know what I mean? Kevin says men should pay for everything. And that's just too extreme, probably, if you ask me.
Yeah, I don't agree with him on that. It doesn't make too much financial sense, especially if you're a couple and you live in a really on the coast in a high priced city. If you don't live in basically the southeast or the Midwest of the country, everywhere else is expensive.
Yeah, you gotta be a $500,000 guy in order to pay for everything, at least.
Yeah, like he says, most guys, well, I guess he talks about the high value guy, but most men would make $42,000 a year, the average black man.
Yeah, around there, 45, 42. So that's pretty far away from.
Yeah, something like about that.
Yeah, I hear you on that. So We're coming across some Kevin Samuels talking points we don't agree with. We're not Kevin Samuels cheerleaders over here. We're actually fair and balanced.
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely are.
All right, so what else does Kevin say? Kevin tells women, if a man doesn't propose to her within a year, he isn't serious, he isn't marriage-minded, and she should move on. I disagree with this. I just proposed to my fiance at the beginning of this year, and we dated for over 3 years, and I've always been serious-minded, so this definitely doesn't apply to me. What I tell people is, you shouldn't get married unless you've been dating for 2 years. To me, 2 years is the minimum, especially in today's culture. If you grew up with somebody, that could be different. Y'all could get married a little quicker or whatnot. But if you're meeting a complete random stranger as a middle-aged adult, you need to be around them for bare minimum, like 20 months before there's any proposal or anything going on together. Because to me, marriage is too serious and it's not a game. It's supposed to be done one time and not three. So I definitely disagree with Kevin on this. He has been divorced twice. I'm not saying because he got married too quick is why he got divorced or whatnot, but maybe divorce is more acceptable in his mind than it is in mine. I'm just very anti-divorce. So if a man doesn't propose in a year, he isn't serious. I disagree. What do you think?
When it comes to a relationship, being a man that is marriage-minded, and I grew up around marriage. My parents weren't married, but my father married his wife, my mother married her husband, and both only got married one time and been with them 20 plus years each. Mm. And I would say where my mind is from the influences I got growing up, I think a year is good, year and a half. In my mind, I would look at it from this standpoint. I would get to know this young lady. If I know I want to get serious with her, I intend to be very black and white, make it very clear, nothing in the gray. Because if you play in the gray, then that's when trouble starts. So being very transparent, upfront, black and white, I say over the course of that year, I would take her through a series of situations, see how she behaves and how she responds in situations. And that could tell me a lot.
You would orchestrate these situations, or how would you take her through these situations? Would they be artificial, or would you be waiting on life to throw her curveballs, or what do you mean?
No, like I would guide her through different times. Like, for example, maybe we go on a trip together, just her and I, see how we work with one another on vacation together. Take her to my home, have her meet my family, my parents, have her meet my friend circle. The women in my family who are married are very big into marriage and they believe it to be very serious. So I would hand her off to them in a few times, just spend some time with them and tell them, just kind of talk to her. And you know my mindset, because they know my mindset. So I would say, you know my mindset, kind of just talk to her and really kind of dig in there and see more about where her mind is compared to how my mind is. So those type of situations, put her in those situations that are going to be really revealing of the inner motivations.
Okay.
And I think that can be done within a year, especially if you're coming at it the way that I would come at it in a very mature standpoint. Framework that says, okay, I'm being serious. This is a black and white. I'm a very black and white person. This is where I intend for things to go. So in order to do this, I want to start making sure I hit these different points to reveal new things to me about the person.
Okay, so you agree with the 1 year, if he's not proposing 1 year, he's not serious? Or would you say the year and a half or 2 years? Or are you gray area? What's your stance on this Kevin Samuels talking point? Quick answer.
I'm really just in the middle because I do believe a year can work. But again, you have to be a mature person.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say you want to be married and that's something that is in your heart, that you must approach this person like that. That's why I take it back to what I said. How do they behave? What is their mindset? What are their motivations? Putting ourselves in situations so that stuff can become more and more revealed to me and I can see more of them and they can see more of me.
Okay, I hear you on that. And I really like what you said about taking them around your friend circle and your family. I feel like women especially, but both men and women can benefit from this. But in the 21st century, people don't use their friends and family to help vet their mates. And I don't understand why, because that's all people did from the beginning of time until like 1930.
Uh-huh.
A boy couldn't date a girl if none of the men in the girl's family liked them. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't happening in 1920, 1950, 1820. Like, it wasn't happening. They vet them. They check them out. They know what his reputation is around the town, around the city. and they give the thumbs up or the thumbs down before things even get started.
Right.
I just don't understand why people are so arrogant that they're like, no one knows what I need or a good person except for me, and I'm going to make this decision alone. Like, it's the most important decision in your life outside of a religious decision or whatever. So
I also like to say, yeah, marriage is one of the most important decisions. Like I said, bring them around your friends and around your family, because again, if you look at marriage from whatever standpoint, if you look at it from like a biblical standpoint, it's the bringing together of families.
Yes.
It's not just the man and woman getting married. It's their families becoming one as well. So that's why if you're intentional in trying to do that, put them in those situations where the families start interacting so you can see more of how her family is as well, because those people will influence and motivate your partner also.
For sure, for sure. How can somebody be a good spouse for you if none or the majority of your friends and family don't like them? How is that possible? You know what I'm saying? Like, if none of your friends think she's a good woman, if none of your close family, I'm not talking about the family members you don't respect or the ones that you have beef with. I'm talking about the ones you actually like and respect.
Exactly.
If none or most of them think she's trash or think he's trash, how is this a good decision to get married? I'm not saying that this is a group project and you should just completely lean on everybody else's opinion. But at the same time, I've never seen a marriage be successful that the majority of the family and friends didn't think was going to be successful. I've never seen it. Any extended family member of mine that married somebody and everybody was kind of like, oh, are you sure about that? They got divorced. Their marriage was rocky, trash, people moving in, moving out, people getting arrested. Like, there's no smooth sailing going on. Anytime a potential spouse comes in, none of the friends and none of the family thinks it's a good idea, but the person in the relationship just bucks everybody's opinion and does it anyway. It's just, I don't get it.
Yeah, I think that's why we're failing a lot. I think we're failing because we're not getting married, but when we are, it doesn't appear as though families are really being involved in it as much. It's like just the two partners, void of maybe their parents, but they're not bringing any of their extended family in or anything. So it's like,
Yeah, I hear you on that, man. All right, let's move along to another Kevin Samuels talking point.
Okay.
He believes that age gap dating is not only okay, but should be the norm. And by age gap dating, he means the man being 5 to 20 years older than a woman shouldn't be frowned upon or shouldn't be a negative thing. It actually should be normalized. And how do I feel about this? I'm not a fence sitter, but I guess I'm kind of a fence sitter on this one. Because I kind of understand where he's coming from, especially if you believe the man should be the leader and the man should pay everything or at least most things, then it's definitely an advantage for him to have more life experience and him to be deeper in his career. So that makes sense. So you got a 40-year-old and a 28-year-old woman or something like that. So from that aspect, it makes sense. But like I said earlier, me personally, yeah, I kind of want to connect with somebody that was pretty much my own age. And I feel like if the age gap is too far, it's hard to connect on a deeper level. So I guess I halfway agree with this. I feel like age gap dating, especially if the man is older and the man's serious and he's not playing with these young girls and manipulating them, I feel like it shouldn't be shunned or shamed. But I don't feel like it's an issue with people dating people their own age either. You know what I mean?
Alexander, I think if you're a 35, 36-year-old man, in this day and age, you can land a hot 26, 27-year-old. Woo! That's definitely, definitely.
That's the goal. That's the
more desirable.
That's the dream.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I hear you on that, yeah. And just to go back to age gap dating, that was the norm from the beginning of time to like the 70s. You know what I mean? The man was always older than the woman, whether it was 2 years or 10 years. Like that was pretty normal. I feel like with the best man at my wedding, his wife told me that if I was the same age as my husband, we probably never would have got married. You know what I'm saying? I like the fact that he's a couple years older than me or whatnot. So it was only a couple years. It's not like it was 10. But still, a woman feels more safe and secure with a man that has more life experience. So,
yeah. And you know what they say? They say that girls mature faster than boys anyways. You know, they say that.
They say that. I don't know. I've never really agreed with that, but they definitely say that. I just feel like, not to get completely off the subject, but do women go through puberty before men do? Yes, by like a year or two. I don't know if it's that big a deal. But as far as their mentality, I just feel like things that are immature that women do aren't labeled as immature. They're just labeled as things that women do. And things that are immature that men do are actually labeled as immature. Oh, why are you always playing video games? Or why are you always with these crass jokes? Or why are you wearing Jordans and jerseys and you're 40 years old or whatever? You know, just like things that men do that some could interpret as immature or viewed and labeled as immature, but women wanting to wear matching clothes or sharing beds on road trips and other stuff that they would have did when they were in the sixth grade. They could do it up until they're like 50 and no one says, hey, this is immature. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I just think it's a difference of perspective.
But you know, Alexander, I want to say when it comes to age gap dating,
yeah,
I think it's a good thing. Again, and I agree with Mr. Samuels, it's a mindset. The only issue a lot of people are going to face these days is even if you're a 35, 36 year old man and you get with a woman that's say 25 to 29, unfortunately in the culture, the girls are having their hot girl summers. They not really trying to get married.
Yep. So it throws everything off.
Yeah.
Women waste their 20s acting a fool or overly diving headfirst in a career that they deep down aren't going to stick with. And then when they get middle-aged, their options have dwindled and potentially they picked up baggage throughout the years.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden they want men to pay them attention or give them a chance or where are all the good men at? And the good men were there when you were ignoring them.
Exactly.
On top of the car, shaking your booty at spring break. You know what I'm saying? The good men were shaking their head side to side like, she must not have been raised right. As they went to their hotel room to read the Bible. That's what the good men were doing when you were shaking it at spring break.
Yep.
Yep. So age gap dating. Personally, I have never partook in it, but I see no issue with it. And actually, I see many benefits of age gap dating up to a certain extent. As long as the man is the older one and he's following the rule of half his age plus 7, as that being the lowest age he will date. Anyway, let's move on to a Kevin Samuels talking point that I don't 100% agree with, and it kind of gets on my nerves. I completely agree with the sentiment and the point he's trying to make when it comes to this subject, but the specifics just rubs me the wrong way as a math guy. All right, let's get into it. Most of Kevin Samuels' phone calls, when he talks to women, he basically asks them questions, trying to figure out what type of lifestyle they want to live and how much their career or their job is going to contribute to paying for that lifestyle. And more times than not, most women either want to be stay-at-home wives or they want to stay at home with their kids for extended periods of time when their kids are small, or they just don't want to have the pressure of having to work for the next 30, 40 years until they're 65. So basically that means, or the Kevin concludes that we can't count on you to bring any money to the family that matters, so all the finances are going to fall on the man. So that's the conclusion Kevin comes to with most of his calls. And then he always asks the woman how many kids you want to have. They typically say 2 or 3, because that's what everybody born after 1980 says for some reason. And so then he basically, what state do you live in? If they name, I'm not talking about the coast, but if they name any other area or state, he'll say something like, okay, so you want 3 kids and you want to live in Tennessee and he has to pay all the bills because you're going to quit your job after you get pregnant. Well, do you want to drive nice cars? Do you want to be able to go on real vacations? I'm not talking about Six Flags or Disney World. I'm talking about overseas. Oh, you do? Are you going to fully pay for your kids' college? Oh, you are? Oh, well, since you're not going to significantly contribute to the bills, you need a high-value man that makes $450,000. Otherwise, you can't have this upper-middle-class lifestyle that you want. And every time I hear Kevin say that, it just grinds my gears. The numbers just don't add up. You have way overestimated how much money a family needs to have an upper middle class lifestyle. In a place like Tennessee, or most of the United States, the Midwest, the South, or the Southwest, you can have a happy, successful, upper middle class lifestyle for a family of 5 for $200,000, $250,000 max. Definitely not the $350,000 to $450,000 that Kevin would typically throw out there.
$250,000 is huge though. When he even says that, I'm like, that's huge money.
I feel like he says middle class or upper middle class, but he's really talking about upper class. Do you want to live lower upper class?
Right.
Or he's talking about like y'all are going overseas twice a year for a week or something like that. I just think he exaggerates the cost of being an upper middle class family. That's my main issue. One, he exaggerates how expensive kids are. When I do the research, according to the latest information provided by the USDA, the cost to raise a kid from birth to age 18, middle class, is $212,300, which is a little less than $12,000 per kid per year. And the cost to raise a child upper class to the age of 18 is a few thousand short of $460,000, which will get you approximately $26,000 a year.
Wow. You said $400,000 to raise one child in an upper middle class lifestyle?
Yes. If you're raising one kid upper class, not middle class, but upper class, it's like $26,000 a year. But Kevin, he'll make it seem like it's $40,000 or $50,000 per year per child. And that's just not true.
Yeah, I think what he talks about when he does that is he also talks about perhaps your kids going to like private school tuition would be $1,000 a month.
I hear what you're saying, but part of the reason there's a difference between the upper class and the middle class figure is that the upper class figure factors in increased child care and educational costs, such as private school. But Kevin does say that the parents will be paying for college. So let's say college is a little bit over $100,000. So that's adding another $6,000 per year. So $26,000 is now $32,000. I still just can't justify saying that kids are more than $32,000 per year. And truthfully, according to Pew Research, to be considered an upper class couple, the household income must be approximately $111,000. And a household of five, $175,000. But let's be more conservative than that. Let's add the $111,000 to be an upper class couple to the $32,000 per kid, like we calculated earlier. Your total household income to be an upper class family in middle America is just a little bit over $200,000,
yeah.
Like I said earlier. If you dig a little bit deeper into the USDA reports, it says that if you have three kids, you shouldn't multiply that annual number by three because each kid is going to incrementally cost less than the previous kid because certain household expenses that they factor into that one kid are shared when you have multiple kids. One example of this shows up in your food costs. The more people you're feeding, the cheaper it is to buy groceries per person, etc., etc. Anyway, my ultimate point is a family of five is not $400,000 unless they're on the coasts. It just isn't. You don't need $400,000 to have a good life for a family of five.
Right.
And he'll say stuff like that. And he'll kind of rub my numerical financial sense the wrong way. Once again, I agree with the sentiment and the overall point that he's making to these female callers. But the dollar figures these high value men must earn is hyperbole. Anyway, what are your thoughts on this topic?
I think his numbers are a bit inflated and primarily just for the really big cities. Because like you said, I mean, you can live in Oklahoma, Nebraska, and you wouldn't need that kind of money because, again, most of it's going to be private school and maybe extracurricular activities, sports, if you're getting private lessons and playing club sports that are like exclusive.
Mm-hmm. Everything has to be the most expensive thing possible in order for his numbers to work out.
Yeah.
Like you have to be AAU, you got to be private school, y'all got to be going on out of country vacations twice a year, y'all got to be switching cars out every other year, they got to be both luxury. Everything has to be top of the line for his numbers to mesh. And he says middle class, or he says upper middle class, so everything can't be top of the line and also upper middle class that doesn't mesh.
Exactly.
So that might be a nitpicky complaint or disagreement I have with Kevin, but it's there nonetheless. Another disagreement that I have with Kevin Samuels is he is pretty much the only person on YouTube that I know that seems to justify or make excuses for men that pay women to be with them. I'll try to keep it PG-13. Before we even get into that, another one of his controversial talking points is high-value men don't cheat. They exercise their options.
Exercise options.
They don't cheat. They exercise their options. And I feel like it's a little cheesy for him to reword it this way because it is cheating unless he has an understanding with this woman that he's open while she's in a closed relationship. So I'm not going to say I agree or disagree with that one because truthfully, I always thought to myself that men that make at least $10,000 a month cheat on their women. If I'm going to make a general assumption, if I'm going to make a general statement, if you're with a rich man, you shouldn't expect them to be faithful. I know women don't want to hear that, but that's how I feel about it. So I don't necessarily disagree with him saying that, but I just kind of disagree with him not calling it cheating if it's cheating. You know what I mean? Like call a spade a spade.
Right.
What are your thoughts?
High-value men don't cheat, they exercise options. Yeah, it is just a fancy way of saying that you're cheating. And you're dipping out every now and again. I know he also really digs down into it and relates it to like the animal kingdom, how lions, I mean, they have to fight for the lioness, and he'll have multiple lionesses in the pride.
Yeah, multiple women.
And then he says back in time where dukes and earls and kings had harems and whatever.
Yeah.
Noblemen had harems of women.
And he's not wrong, but cheating is still cheating. If you don't have an understanding with that woman,
yeah,
that you can dip out, then it's still cheating.
Cheating is still adultery. If you're married, that's adultery to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if it works for some people in that situation, I guess the only thing I can say is whatever floats your boat.
Yeah. What do they say? What happens with consenting adults is kind of up to them.
Right.
That kind of divorces people of morals, but hey.
Yeah. That's why I say, Alexander, it's adultery to me. And adultery is, you shouldn't be defiling your bed.
Definitely. So just going along those lines, Kevin Samuels seems not to have problems with men using call girls. In particular, high-value men using call girls. And of course, I disagree with it. If you got to pay for it, A, it's illegal. B, it's kind of cheesy and kind of diminishes you as a man. C, it's wrong. You know what I'm saying? But Kevin kind of is the only person I've ever heard on a public platform kind of justify. He's kind of like, all right, high-value men are busy. They don't cheat. They exercise options.
You know, Alexander, he does also say they exercise options, but he also says that doesn't mean that that is something that they actually will do.
Yeah, he does say they don't have to.
Yeah, everybody got that buzzword, exercise options, but he says it at the end that that doesn't mean that that's something that they will do.
Yeah, and he also has his rules on how you should exercise options if you do. No outside babies, no STDs, no public embarrassment. You don't bring it in your household. You don't put it in your woman's face.
Right.
So I can agree with those rules. I disagree with the premise, but
yeah,
if you do it that way and you got an understanding with your woman, I guess it's okay. But I can't co-sign cheating. I can't co-sign hookers and call girls or anything like that to make cheating easier.
Have a good time on speed dial.
Would you rather him be at the club trying to holler at women or just order one up and get his rocks off and send her away and then get back to making money and buying you red bottoms? He kind of makes it seem like that. And I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah, out of sight, out of mind, Alexander. Out of sight, out of mind.
I can't co-sign all of that, but hey, there's nobody that I agree with 100%. So that's a Kevin Samuels talking point that I just can't put the Alexander B. Stevens signature next to.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it either. I understand it, but I'm not a fan of it just because for the most part, it's adultery.
Yep, I hear you. All right, let's move on from that and let's get to a talking point that I kind of understand. Him talking to women. If you're so great, why can't you get a man or why can't you keep a man? If you're so great, why aren't you married? He doesn't say those words directly, but I'm just kind of paraphrasing.
Right.
And this is him basically talking to middle-aged women that are still out here looking. If you're as great as you think you are, then why hasn't a man of value decided to give you a ring of significant caritage, as he would say, and propose to you in public?
In public, yep.
And it kind of makes sense because women be arguing with what he says and he's just saying things that men like or men want. And they're like, no, that doesn't matter. They're arguing with what men want as if they know. And then he doesn't do this anymore, but he used to say, look at your ring finger. You know what I'm saying? Like,
exactly.
What does your husband think about that? And they have no husband. What does your boyfriend think about that? And they have no boyfriend, but they're doing all this arguing and all this fussing.
Uh-huh.
It's like, if you're right, or if you're such a great woman, then why are you unattached? So that's one of his talking points that I guess could rub women the wrong way or whatnot, but I kind of agree with him. If you're so great, so desirable, and you're over the age of 30, why aren't you married? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with him. I think a lot of those ladies, again, they took that route that they were taught younger to graduate high school, go to college, get that degree, get a good job, go up the ladder, be all you can be. Forsake anything else that could potentially slow you down from reaching that goal.
Yep.
And that's what a lot of them fell in. They fell into that hole, unfortunately. And to really move up in their careers, it takes years. That's why they find themselves 30, 32, 35 single, because they were forsaking the dating market or marriage market. They might have had hookups or situationships, but nothing of any real substance, due in part that they're trying to achieve goals. And they feel like that in doing that, they can't have a man there because a man will take them off their game. And which is crazy to me because, I mean, he says it all the time. Your counterparts, they're doing the same thing, achieving ladies, but they get husbands.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be able to juggle both.
Why can't you?
Exactly.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, another Kevin Samuels talking point, and this is kind of a paraphrase again.
Okay.
He basically says that women should value, date, and marry average and slightly above average men more than they do. Why? Well, because most women themselves are average at best.
Mm-hmm.
And these average men and blue collars workers actually built the world that they live in and take advantage of every day. So Kevin kind of defends men, basically. On one end, he's basically saying, if you're not rich, you shouldn't get married in today's culture. But then on the other end, he's kind of saying, it shouldn't be that way, though, because women should value and appreciate average men and hardworking blue collar men because they built the world that women get to take advantage of. So with this latest talking point, I hear where he's coming from. Entitlement or that lack of appreciation for the hardworking, good-hearted man that only makes 50 or 60,000 is just kind of offensive to me. What do you think?
Oh, I 100% agree. The men in my family who are married, they were average men. They married average women and they're still together.
Yeah.
Average men, truck drivers, contractors, federal employees, married average women, came together, got married, boom. Again, I think a lot of it was based off values and more of a community, a sense of duty on top of doing it for the community. They have a duty behind it. And today people just don't, and it's destroying things. So
yeah, I feel like whatever happened to two heads is better than one. Even if you are average, I guess there's too many women that basically think, if this guy can't upgrade my life significantly, then I might as well be by myself. And that doesn't make any sense at all. If he upgrades your life slightly, isn't it worth it?
Exactly.
And I think we talked about this earlier. I want to get beyond money, but even if we just talk about money, having a roommate saves you like 20% on your bills. It could be just that. And I know you don't have to get married to have a romantic roommate, but you might as well. If y'all are living together and sharing the bills, like, what are we doing here? Of course, y'all are probably going to have some kids. So what are we doing? But I just don't understand it. Most people are average. Why can't average people get with average people and be happy?
Yeah, like you said, two incomes is always better than one. You get other tax benefits that brings in extra money for you.
Yeah, I just don't get it.
Alexander, you know, when you're married, you have the ability. You don't want to come to the marriage thinking with this as your anywhere near a primary thought process, but you have the ability to one person to lose a job and lose income, and you can still not crash and burn. Because if you buy yourself, you lose your job, you're going to be on that uh-oh. At least you have someone to backstop you.
Yeah. You don't have any backup. You have nobody on your team, no support.
Mm-hmm.
You lose your job, you're on a friend's couch, or you're under the bridge that you used to drive over when you went to the club to waste $1,000 on bottles. You know what I'm saying? Your life could go all the way left.
Exactly.
If you're by yourself out here in this world that doesn't give a blank about you. So why not pair up with somebody that actually cares and put your resources and your efforts together and make the best out of life? I just don't understand it.
All right, we are drawing near the end of Kevin Samuels' talking points that I wanted to discuss. What's something else that Kevin says? Well, when talking to women, Kevin says that women need men to survive, but men do not need women.
Outside of reproduction, if it just was a survival thing and our society wasn't as civilized, that men could do it without women, but women would crash and burn. And then he often refers to Bear Grylls Island season 2.
Yeah.
And I actually watched that season after he talked about it a bunch of times, and the women didn't crash and burn, but I feel like they got a whole lot of help from producers and things of that nature. But toward the beginning of the season, they were on the path to destruction. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like they had to get some help, unless that show would have got cut off pretty early, because women like to lead by committee and they're having difficulty building their shelter because women just don't have the hand strength to build infrastructure like men do and things of that nature. So I kind of get what he's getting at. I don't know how productive it is to divide the genders like that or whatever.
Right.
In a perfect situation, we both make each other better, so we're better together than apart.
Right.
And I feel like he does say that, but anytime a woman gets a little bit too uppity or whatnot, he's like, hey, men built the world and we don't really need you outside of reproduction. But without us, you're done for. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. it would suck without ladies for reproductive manners.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I look at myself and I'm like, when the stuff hits the fan, I get down to work.
Yeah.
I set out a plan and I'm going to survive.
Yes.
It's not going to be no, I hope or I feel like something. No, this is the plan. Work it. You're going to survive.
I completely agree with you. We're definitely on the same page with that one. What else does Kevin say? Kevin says dating is dumb because usually dating is done unintentionally. And really, there's only so much you can truly learn with somebody that you don't live with. So I guess him thinking that dating is dumb. Well, the way that people date in 2022 is kind of dumb. I would agree with that. But the whole institution of dating is trash and should be done away with. Sometimes it almost seems like he's saying that people really shouldn't date, period. And I don't know about that. I mean, he's right saying that you won't learn certain things until you marry somebody or live with them. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I feel like intentional dating isn't dumb. If you're actually doing what you said earlier, you're vetting the girl, putting her through different situations. She's doing the same to you. Y'all having deep conversations. Like, that isn't dumb. But this hookup culture is dumb. This dating with no purpose and no direction is dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, 80% of the dating going on now is dumb. So I mostly agree with them on this.
Yeah.
But I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, purposeless and non-intentional dating and relationship, I think is pretty useless because you're essentially just getting a hookup partner that's consistent,
mm-hmm.
or partners. And that's all it really is. If you have no purpose behind it or no intention behind it, it's just, hey, I'm trying to have me a little chick that I know I can smash every couple days, every couple weeks, and it's consistent, boom, boom, boom. I'm not out here hunting for new stuff. I know I got something right now. I might spend a little money on her here and there. She might spend some money on me. We might get into it. I might hurt her feelings. She might try to come at me. We might be at each other's throat,
yeah.
Get mad, make up, have sex again.
Repeat.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of pointless and purposeless and repetitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you on that. All right, the last Kevin Samuels talking point that I want to bring up in this episode is something he tells the women that they don't really like hearing, is that he tells women, do not go out with a man on a third date. Unless after the date you're willing to go back to his place for a nightcap that ends with some backroom under the covers horizontal dance moves, if you know what I mean. Unless you're going Dutch on these dates. But if he's paying for these dates, you shouldn't make it to a third date unless you're ready to go to the bedroom. Men are tired of being used. What are your thoughts?
I agree. That's happened to me a time or two in my past.
That you got used or they let you roll in the hay with them? Both.
Both, yeah, yeah. Sometimes even sooner than the third date. But I got lucky those times.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, because it costs a lot of money. You don't really know, from our perspective as a man, it costs money. You don't really know if she's truly into you or not. And by that third date, if you get some, you know at least she's got some level of interest in you for you to get the goodies.
Yeah, yeah. Season one, I basically told women that starting with date number three, you must do something to show you are invested in this man and you truly are interested. Now, I didn't necessarily say that they needed to sleep with him, but you need to do something. You need to pay for a date. You need to cook for them. Maybe you don't go all the way to home base. Maybe you stop at third base.
Uh-huh.
You need to do something out of the ordinary that shows that, yes, you really like this man. And yes, you're interested in the things going forward.
Right.
And if you don't expect guys to hang around, because we are men. We're supposed to leave. We're supposed to instigate. We understand that. But we're only going to do so much without getting any kind of return on our investment and our time before we move on to other options. Would you agree with that?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Absolutely agree. 100%. Got to give something.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Kevin's saying it in a more crude way, in a more stringent way, but it's kind of a similar point. So,
right.
Of course, I agree with myself. So, yeah, yeah. I would like for you to tell me and my audience your opinion on why you think Kevin Samuels is so controversial. Give me a couple reasons. And
is there anything he can do about that? Or is there anything that the women should change so they accept his message better, or what? What are your thoughts on that?
I think he's so controversial because he really is getting to the root of our problems. He dissects the issues at a level that I believe that a lot of us don't really even intellectually go.
Mm.
when it comes to relationships. I mean, he dissects the problem down to a freaking, oh my God, like it's a super mathematical formula. I mean, he goes down to the root causes. And I think once you really dig into some things like that, it reveals hurt and pain. And I believe he hit a lot of hurt and pain that people don't like and that is forcing them to have to speak with their family about. So his ability to dissect it so deep, it's like you have a sore that, okay, let's say you get cut or something on your body and it's, you feel it down to your bones. That's where he's going.
That's pretty deep.
Yeah.
I hear you on that. So do you think he should change his tone or his approach, or should he keep everything the same and people that want the knowledge will accept it and people that want to be hard-headed will knock their heads up against the wall?
I think he should keep it. I mean, he says it all the time. He says that he matches your energy. So if the person that he's on the phone with having a conversation with, if they're like you and I, he's going to match our energy. If they're coming at him in an aggressive stance, he comes at them in an aggressive stance. I think that's perfectly fine. It's like, if you don't want to be disrespected, don't disrespect him. If you want to have a nice conversation, he'll have a nice conversation.
I hear you. I used to call myself back in my younger days an amplophytic mirror. Maybe I was making up words back in the day, but I amplify and mirror whatever you give to me. If you invite me to a party that sucks, I might make it worse. If you invite me to a party that's good, I'm going to make it better. If you come at me with attitude, I'm going to come at you with twice as much. I'm going to talk about you so bad that you're going to be saying in the shower, balled up in a ball, rocking back and forth, crying and wondering why your mother had you. So that's what I used. That was more immature, younger Alexander Stevens. But that's what I used to say about myself. So Kevin kind of is the same way, kind of reflects energy. And like you said, if you don't want to be disrespected, don't be disrespectful.
Right. Exactly.
Anyway, I appreciate you taking time out to talk with me and my audience today about Kevin Samuels and break down some of his top talking points.
Absolutely, Alexander.
Let's tie everything together. Final question of the Kevin Samuels Examine series. Give me a synopsis of your opinion of Kevin Samuels and his talking points. Should women listen to him? Should they not? Is the controversy warranted? Is it not? Give me a 2-minute synopsis of Kevin Samuels and how you think women should deal with him and handle him.
I think women should listen to him because over the last year and a half, he's taken us from different points, from start at point A all the way to point Z on different ways to handle relationships. I think the root of what he wants to do is he wants to truly try to reform Black family, Black relationships. And as an extension, when he has his other viewers of non-Black viewers, that extends out to them as well. I think ultimately he's trying to get to the root causes and the root problems and say, okay, the problem is this. This is a painful problem. But if we're ever going to be able to move forward as a community, not as a bunch of individuals, but as a community, the community will only grow from that small family unit.
Yes.
And once that small family unit gets strong, then it will expand. And once it expands, that's when you start growing what he likes to talk about, generational wealth, power, influence. That's how you're going to correct and make stronger the community. But it's all going to start with the formation of the family, with the recreating, restructuring, reimagining the way our family structure can be so that it is one that is conducive to success and moving forward and getting out of this stagnant place that we're currently in.
Yeah.
Again, the fit, feminine, friendly, submissive, cooperative, childless, all matters. All of that will be able to make a family flow, make a family be a structure so that it can go on for a long period of time. And then you can create those values that you can instill in your children. And once you're teaching them right, then they can teach their children. And once again, that small family unit will continue to grow and grow and grow, thus making not only your family, your neighborhoods, and then your communities and your cities, and then your states, and then your nation more powerful.
Yep, definitely. I hear you on that. What's my synopsis on Kevin Samuels? I pretty much personally, I agree with 75 to 80% of what he says. I think, is he on YouTube to make money? Yes, but he's also trying to help American culture and his community as well. So two birds with one stone.
Right.
Could he do some things differently or better? Or his tone sometimes or some of the ways he treats some people? Could it be better? I suppose nobody's perfect, but I feel like the message is the most important thing. For example, let's say you are a single parent of three and you are collecting welfare. You're poor. Some of your bills are past due and your rent's late. You feel like, and you always say to yourself that if you could just come into some money, all your problems would be solved. Let's say one day you get a text message from a random number saying, "Hey, you lazy bum, why don't you go into your backyard and dig up that buried treasure?" The next day you get a letter in the mail saying, "If you didn't spend all your time being a scumbag scamming welfare, you could just go into your backyard and get rich." The next day you get a phone call. The guy cusses you, saying, "Listen, you lazy piece of S, go into your backyard with your shovel, dig up this buried treasure, and all your problems will be solved." The last day, a random guy comes up to your front door, rings the doorbell, you open for some reason, and he says, "You trailer park trash. You're poor because your mindset's poor. You're poor because you come from a family of poorness. You're poor because you don't read, you don't listen, and you don't take action. All you need to do is go into your backyard, take 10 paces to the south, 3 paces to the east, stop being lazy, you bleepity bleep, grab your shovel, dig 2 feet into the ground, locate the suitcase, take it out the ground, and inside is $1 million cash." Now, if you're this poor single parent, would it be smart for you to never pick up a shovel, never go into your backyard, never try to dig up this money? Because you didn't like the way the message was delivered? Because the tone was off? Because he was too mean? Even though the solution to all your problems is in your backyard? Huh? Or would it be smart to overlook the tone if the tone rubs you the wrong way? Overlook this part if it rubs you the wrong way. Pay attention to the overall message that he's trying to give you. Take advantage of that and allow him and that message and that advice to improve your life. Like, which way is the better way to go? You know, are you too prideful to go back there because he was yelling at you? Or are you going to take the good advice and improve your life? So I don't know if that's the best analogy, but that's kind of analogy I would think of when it comes to Kevin Samuels, because he can't come off abrasive and arrogant sometimes. But if you get beyond that and listen to the actual message, know that A, it's not just him talking, but it's most men agreeing with most of the things he says, but we're just not allowed to say it in this culture. And B, it'll actually improve and help your life if you actually try the advice. What you've been doing doesn't work. You're 30, 35, 40, 45. You're not close to getting married. Your relationship history is trash. So why not try something different if what you've been trying doesn't work? You know what I mean?
I agree.
And on that note, I'm going to bid you adieu. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely, sir.
I know you're a busy man and you got things to do. Appreciate you. And you have a good night.
You too.
All right. There you have it, the conclusion of the 3-part Kevin Samuels Examine series. Over 2 hours and 22 minutes of information-packed analysis and discussion. Before we get into our end of episode recap, if you enjoyed this episode or any of the episodes from this season, don't forget to show Alexander B. Stevens a little bit of love in his Cash App, $WhatIZHeThinking. Like, share, and subscribe on YouTube, drop a comment, and let us know your 2 cents about Kevin Samuels. All right, let's get to that recap. This episode, we started off with some of the advice he gives young men. He advises young men not to get married unless they are a high earner. And this is something that SW and I could not agree with, because that means the overwhelming majority of men would not get married. And it's not like guys are going to be out here celibate. So you're just going to get more children out of wedlock, more broken families, and more families that are never put together in the first place. On one hand, it seems like Kevin is talking about bringing families together or creating families. But with this tidbit of advice, that would have the opposite effect. Next topic that was brought up is advice that Kevin gives the men, saying that men should pay for everything when they're dealing with a woman. Me and SW said this is idealistically true, but realistically and practically unreasonable for the overwhelming majority of men. Based on the fact that women are in the workforce and many of them want to work, our current culture, and the price of living in 21st century America. However, we did agree that men should probably pay the majority of the bills, or at least the most significant ones, especially if they are traditional leaning like Kevin and we are. Next talking point is, if a man doesn't propose to a woman within a year, he isn't a serious man. He's not serious about you or the relationship. And lady, you should get out. I completely disagree with this. A couple times throughout the existence of this podcast, I have advised women to date at a bare minimum of 2 years before getting married. So, of course, I advise men to do the same thing. I feel like 1 year just isn't long enough. That being said, if a woman is paying attention and the dating is intentional, then a year and a half in, you pretty much should know that you're about to get proposed to. SW, on the other hand, felt like as long as the individuals are mature, 1 year could work, but he wasn't exactly 100% sold on men not being serious if they don't propose within 1 year. During this marriage discussion, we kind of spun off and talked about how people, but women especially, should use individuals in their family to help vet potential mates and whoever they are considering marrying. We just don't understand why more and more people today make that type of decision completely independently, even though throughout 98% of human history, that was never a completely independent type decision because it's too important. Next, Kevin Samuels' talking point is age gap dating is good. A man being 6, 15, 20 years older than the woman not only is good, but should be preferred. It definitely should not be shunned. SW pretty much agreed with this. I was kind of on the fence. I can see both sides. I do think that there's value in dating individuals your own age, but I also understand the value in a man being 5, 10, 15 years older than his woman, and that also being a benefit to both of them. So, unlike other issues, I was somewhat on the fence about this one. Switching gears, another issue that I have with Kevin Samuels is that sometimes he exaggerates the dollar figure required for a man to be the sole breadwinner of an upper middle class household in America. When he's talking to a woman that, whether she realizes it or not, requires a high value man in order for her to be happy and settled. His sentiment is correct, but just the specific dollar figure that he uses is pretty much always exaggerated, and that's just something that kind of rubs me the wrong way. Another talking point that Kevin Samuels has that I disagree with completely is the fact that he is okay with men being in sugar baby, sugar daddy relationships or just straight paying a high-class call girl to get his rocks off. I just completely disagree with this type of behavior for multiple reasons, one being that it's disrespectful to yourself to have to pay for it. He comes up with clever reasoning and excuses for it, but we just don't buy it. Another Kevin Samuels talking point is that high-value men don't cheat. They just exercise options. Now, he doesn't say they always have to exercise options, but he implies very strongly that they have the right to exercise options. While I agree with him technically, because all he's saying is high-earning men cheat, and this has been a known fact, at least in my brain, since I was young, the fact that he won't just call it cheating, call it what it is, kind of rubs SW and me the wrong way. Moving on, when he has a female caller that has her head too high in the clouds, sometimes he'll break her down by saying something like this. Well, if you're so great, why are you unable to get the type of man you want to propose to you with a ring of significant heritage? If you're so great, why are you single? And especially if you're over the age of 30, we both kind of agree with him on this one. The net of it is that if you are over 30, 35, and you've never been married, never close to being married, and you're single, then that is a red flag. It means you need to change something. Your dating strategy, your standards, or the quality of woman you are, if not all of the above. Regardless, you should probably not be so high and mighty and arrogant. Humble yourself and listen to the advice of Kevin or any man that's trying to help you. Something else Kevin tells the women when they are getting a little full of themselves is that women need men to survive, but men don't need women. Outside of reproduction, men are self-sufficient. While SW and I believe he's technically correct with this assertion, we feel like it's divisive and doesn't really help him with his ultimate goal of bringing couples together and bringing families together. So why say it? Another talking point that Kevin hammers home at least once or twice a month is that women should value the average man. Women should have no problem dating the average man, the blue-collar man, for multiple reasons. One of those reasons being most women are average themselves. So what's wrong with average people getting with average people like humans did throughout most of humanity? SW and I completely agree with this point, and I really don't see how anyone can argue with it. Of course, we all know and understand that hypergamy exists, but hypergamy will leave you single. And as Kevin says, buying a dog and dying alone. One of the final talking points that we discussed in this final episode of the series is Kevin thinks dating is dumb. And depending on how you interpret that statement, I can kind of agree with it and kind of be confused by it. We do agree that the way that most people date here in 2022 is aimless, pointless, and kind of dumb. But there is a way to date or court that is effective, efficient, and necessary in order to have a chance at having a healthy, happy marriage with somebody. Kevin also, when it comes to dating, advises women that if you're not willing to go to bed with a man after the third date, you shouldn't be going on a third date with him. Stop dating him. Don't string him along. Don't use him. Part ways. I feel like most men would agree with this sentiment because a lot of men who are dating during the 21st century, most of the time feel like they're being used or led on by women. Me, myself, I completely understand what he says, but what I teach here on this podcast is that after the third date, you must do something of significance that shows you are invested. That does not necessarily mean going to the bedroom, but you must do something. Cook a meal, pay for a date, heavy petting, something of significance. If you do nothing, then that does give off user vibes. We wrapped up the episode talking about why Kevin is so controversial and what our overall thoughts about him were. I'm not going to expend too much energy rehashing our conclusions regarding those two questions because we just talked about them 5 minutes ago. But to summarize those conclusions, all in all, Kevin Samuels is a worthwhile source for women to go to for dating advice and insight on the way the average, above average, and high value man thinks. Is he perfect? No, but he's 80-85% spot on. So, when you're not listening to this podcast, we would suggest you check out a full episode or three of his material. All right. My name is Alexander B. Stevens. My guest host was SW. This is the What Is He Thinking podcast. We have concluded the Kevin Samuels Examine series. Make sure to like, share, comment, and subscribe. And make sure to come back next time to listen to us talk about the most common misconceptions that women have about men. Until next time, Alexander B. Stevens, out.
Well, that wraps up this episode of the podcast. Alexander B. thanks you for taking time out of your day to listen to what he has to say. Hopefully, you feel the information shared today has helped you get one step closer to understanding men and one step closer to the type of relationship you have always dreamed of. If this episode spoke to you or you indeed felt that it was helpful, please share it with your friends and followers on social media and text the link to the episode to your inner circle of friends. If you have a future topic suggestion or need any clarification about anything that was shared during this episode, feel free to email the show at whatizhethinking@gmail.com or follow and DM the show on Instagram at whatizhethinking_podcast. Be clear and concise with your message, and Mr. Stevens will do his best to accommodate you. Once again, we appreciate you lending us a listening ear, and we hope your tomorrow is better than your yesterday. Enjoy the rest of your week. The podcast that is here to help you win with men, signing off. Until we speak again.